It felt like God was angry. He wonders, am I being punished? Did I do something wrong? Is this the kind of God we have, a God who inflicts pain on us? The questions are real, the emotions are raw, and we have our questions too. Sometimes the life of faith feels like a game of holy hide-and-seek, and God is nowhere in sight.
That's the Reverend Bill Carter, and today he brings you an inspiring message of faith entitled Morning to Morning. I'm Peter Wallace, and this is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's historic Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now, to introduce this week's preacher, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thank you, Sherry. Today on Day One, we're honored to have with us the Reverend William G. Carter, pastor and head of staff of First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, Pennsylvania, since 1990. Bill is also a well-known jazz pianist who founded and leads the Presby Bop Quartet. He earned a philosophy degree from Binghamton University and his Master of Divinity from Princeton Theological Seminary. The author of numerous books and articles, he speaks and performs frequently at church conferences, workshops, and special events. Bill, welcome to Day One.
Hey, it's great to be back.
It's amazing that this year, 2019, marks your 20th anniversary of preaching on Day One and its predecessor, the Protestant Hour. That's wonderful. You were last with us 7 years ago, too long, and you're still serving the same congregation in northeastern Pennsylvania and thriving in ministry. In fact, you've served there nearly 30 years now. First of all, introduce us to the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit. Who are the people and what are they up to?
It is a great congregation nestled in the hills right above the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. It's thriving, although as a lot of the landscape continues to change in American Protestantism, so that's reflected with these folks. The congregation's a little grayer and also, I think, a little wiser, more savvy. We're watching as many of the neighboring congregations are withering almost to nothing, which is kind of frightening. But we are trying to be a resource not only for our community, but a resource for the Presbyterian and other churches around our region. Education program is wonderful. We have a number of PhDs in religion and biology and whatever else, teaching adult education. And we have a music program, which is extremely fine. One of the things that has been thriving since I was last here is a new arts ministry, which brings in a variety of concert artists and a variety of performing groups. And that has become, again, a resource and an outreach for our entire region.
It's rather unusual for a pastor to serve the same church for that long. So they must love you, but you have to be amazed at the changing landscape of the church, not only there, but in the world today.
Yeah, I am. It is all the more important for a pastor to have spiritual vitality that keeps them imaginative and thriving, some Sabbath time to recharge the batteries, but also a variety of interests beyond just the parish that keep you grounded in your faith and your hope and your love. For me, the jazz music, for whatever reason, has emerged since I've been there. And that has become a conduit of a lot of theological reflection as well as helped to enhance some of the congregational music that we do.
So what would you tell the Bill Carter of 30 years ago if you could tell him something?
Get more exercise earlier and watch what you eat. I would say prepare for the long haul, but still stay attentive to the whisper of the Spirit. There were opportunities and even invitations for me to think about other ministries along the way. Fortunately, none of them came from my existing congregation. In each one, there was a moment of vocational clarity that had to come. I had I had to hear that, yes, where I am continues to be the place. At the same time, the congregation is really about the fourth or fifth congregation I've served in the same building in the same zip code. meaning that it has continued to be renewed and replenished itself.
So you mentioned your work with the Presby Bop Quartet, and listeners should know that over the years we've used some of your pieces on our program. So how did that get started?
Well, the myth at this point is that the congregational myth is that one Sunday for Labor Day weekend, the organist could not find a sub. So in a fit of desperation, she said, could you play the hymns? And I said, sure, I could. And then she said, are you going to jazz them up? And I said, well, why not? It's Labor Day weekend. Who's going to be there? And then she conspired with church staff to send out a press release, and everybody was there, including about 50 migrant workers from Mexico and Haiti with which the congregation had begun to do some work. And after that came the most terrifying question, can you do this again next week? So we don't do that every week. We do it four or five times a year. It's part of the rotation and the mix. We do a Mardi Gras Sunday and a Christmas Eve Jazz Eucharist, as well as the Labor Day one and other Jazz Vespers. But the interesting thing is that this has called forth the gifts of the congregation, musical and otherwise, so that they can throw their own melodies into the mix. And that's part of the fun of watching it and seeing the church continually be renewed. So the journey has been pretty wild. We just celebrated our 25th anniversary as a performing ensemble. The group is now often a sextet. There is a little more fluidity with the membership and the cast of characters, but we've recorded 10 CDs and 3 DVDs and published a jazz hymnal companion for churches that want to use jazz in their services. It's just great fun.
It is. And where can people find out about the Presby Bop Quartet?
Well, thank you for asking. the website is www.presbybop.com. That's P-R-E-S-B-Y-B-O-P.
Excellent. Bill, your day one sermons this week and next both draw on the Psalms. First of all, remind us, what are the Psalms?
The Psalms are well-polished liturgical prayers collected by the Levites probably in the Second Temple of Jerusalem. Some may have originated with King David, but some originated before and after him. They are communal prayers, and in Israel's faith, they are to be sung and lifted off the page. Unfortunately, they did not record any of the tunes. It was all kind of a craft from one generation to the next. But we do see every once in a while something in the margin that says Selah. No one's been able to translate that. Walter Brueggemann once suggested that that was where the psalmist said the saxophonist can wail here. Eugene Peterson once told me that that's what David blurted out when he broke a string, Selah. But they are prayers that are owned by the community, even though they are often spoken in the first person singular. As the psalm for today, I will extol you, O Lord. It is an individual speaking, but this is brought into communal worship as a way of speaking and voicing our faith in front of us all, in the midst of us all.
And say more about how the Psalms can be a source of inspiration in our prayer life.
Psalms are our venerable treasure. Here's what I discovered on a pastoral sabbatical a number of years ago. I decided that I knew about 10 Psalms very well and 140 not so well, so I decided to spend the summer working through the Psalter. Went to the Outer Hebrides of Scotland, where they chant the Psalms in Gaelic, call and response, maybe 3 verses at a time, slow them down, and spent some time in the Benedictine Monastery in the high desert of New Mexico, where they work through the Psalter in an entire week, and they call it the work of God. The primary discovery that I made is that we don't have to construct the words of our own prayers. The words are already there in the book. I'm a Presbyterian. We're supposed to write our prayers or create them anew. But in discovering the Psalter in a fresh way, I discovered I had a vocabulary already given to me. And not a vocabulary for the good times only, but the bad times as well.
We'll talk more about the Psalms next week. This week, your sermon focuses on Psalm 30. Would you read it for us?
I will extol you, O Lord, for you have drawn me up and did not let my foes rejoice over me. O Lord my God, I cried to you for help, and you have healed me. O Lord, you brought up my soul from Sheol, restored me to life from among those gone down to the pit. Sing praises to the Lord, O you, his faithful ones, and give thanks to his holy name. For his anger is but for a moment, his favor is for a lifetime. Weeping may linger for the night, but joy comes with the morning. As for me, I said in my prosperity, I shall never be moved. By your favor, O Lord, you had established me as a strong mountain. You hid your face, I was dismayed. To you, O Lord, I cried and said to the Lord, I made supplication, what profit is there in my death if I go down to the pit? Will the dust praise you? Will it tell of your faithfulness? Hear, O Lord, and be gracious to me. O Lord, be my helper. You have turned my mourning into dancing. You have taken off my sackcloth and clothed me with joy, so that my soul may praise you and not be silent. O Lord my God, I will give thanks to you forever.
Bill, do we know anything at all about the background of this particular psalm?
Absolutely nothing. But if we do a little exegesis of our own souls, we know it all too well. Life does not proceed always in a straight ascending line. It has its valleys as well as its peaks. And I think this psalm narrates the experience of someone who is recovering from some trouble, some enemy, some difficulty. And so the psalm becomes porous enough for us to step into it. Mm. And the words can narrate our own recovery, our own healing.
Well, your sermon is entitled Mourning with a U to Mourning. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Glad to be here. Her living room was filled with shadows. The shades were pulled, the curtains were drawn, and no light had entered the room, even though the sun was shining outdoors. There was a solitary lamp on the table, with the dim glow of a 40-watt bulb. It's the only light in a room filled with shadows. She looked up and said, "When will I feel better?" Can you imagine who she is? I haven't told you anything else about her. Is she bearing a long illness, perhaps recovering from surgery? Perhaps that is why there is little light in the room. Is she a widow surrounded by empty tissue boxes, still in the numbness of grief? Maybe it is 5 months after the funeral, and everybody else has gone back to their normal lives, and life for her will never be normal again. Or is she someone who carries a burden that no one ever sees? The son who moved away at 17 is now in jail, or the daughter has fallen again into 30 days of rehab, or her best friend betrayed her in broad daylight, or some embarrassment puts her on the headlines. It is hard for her to leave the shadows. She wants to know, when will I feel better? The sermon today is for her, because the psalm is for her. Psalm 30 is filled with joy, but as we get into it, we learn it is hard-earned joy. This ancient poem knows about the reality of trouble, and it doesn't settle on what kind of trouble it is. The ancient poet mentions some unnamed enemies. We don't know who they are. There is a cry for help and a declaration of physical healing. leading the editor of our English Bible to add the line, "Recovery from a grave illness." The poet says, "I was on the verge of death," sharing some worry about falling into the pit, a euphemism for Sheol, the resting place of the dead. There is also mention of sackcloth, the ancient garb for those who were contending with humiliation or grief. So what's going on here? The same thing that happens in a lot of psalms. The specific details have been sanded away. We have a poem that rings true for anybody who knows how it feels to be in trouble. Woven within each line is the hope that someday life will be better. Nobody needs to tell us what it's like to fall into the pit. The psalmist knows, and so do the rest of us. This ancient poem is a good reminder for all of us that on any given Sunday morning, we don't know the full story of those sitting around us. They might have climbed out of wreckage to get to worship that day. Thank God they are with us. The promise of the psalm is that life can be restored, that souls can be lifted up, that healing is possible and enemies will not finally rejoice. It will take a while for anyone to complete that emotional journey, but we do make our way through, and this is the work of God. It is God who heals, God who lifts. Mourning with a U will lead to mourning the dawn of a new day. When trouble draws close, it is hard to believe that. For the poet who composed this psalm, it felt like God was angry. He wonders, am I being punished? Did I do something wrong? Is this the kind of God we have, a God who inflicts pain on us? The questions are real, the emotions are raw, and we have our questions too. Do we belong to God, yes or no? Where is God anyway? Sometimes the life of faith feels like a game of holy hide-and-seek, and God is nowhere in sight. But this is where the poet of Psalm 30 gives us a lesson in good Jewish prayer. He says, "You know, God, you won't get any benefit if I go down to the pit. If I go back to the dust, that dust will never praise you. The dirt will not be able to tell of your reliability." Do you hear what he's saying? He is lifting a line from Father Abraham. Will you wipe out a sinful city if you can find 50 good people there? Okay, how about 40? All right then, 30, 20, or 10? Come on, Lord, you can't wipe out a few good people if you find them. Now this is a daring prayer. Or there's that great Jewish prayer from Moses. God sees the Israelites made a golden calf to worship, and God is so angry there is fire snorting out of the divine nostrils. God threatens to wipe them out until Moses says, "Wait a second, Lord. You are the God who brought your own people out of slavery in Egypt. If you wipe them out now, what will the Egyptians say? They'll say their own God stole our labor force only to wipe them out in the mountains. You can't do that, God. You have a reputation to maintain." I think this might be a pretty good way to pray. We could say, "God, you went to the trouble to get me baptized and tell everybody that I belong to you. Do you really think it's a good idea to heap a lot of trouble on me and leave me in despair? Come on, Lord, come and help me." Did you ever imagine we could pray like that? That's how the psalm teaches us to pray. There is no reason to remain stuck in the shadows when we have a God who separated the light from the darkness. There is no reason to be insulated or isolated when we need God to help. As for those of us who have been carried through the desert on grace, we should tell the stories of how we came through to the other side. As somebody said about a support group that helped him, "It has been a safe place to talk honestly about my struggles, hear how others have gotten through them, and pursue the grace and courage to begin over again." If the church is not going to be like that, you have to wonder what the big deal is about it. The second beatitude of Jesus goes like this: "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." That sounds like his commentary on Psalm 30. He doesn't say how it's going to happen, nor does he say how long it's going to take. Yet the promise lingers. The psalmist says, "I cried to you for help, and you have healed me." The poet who writes those words is testifying to the saving love of God. He or she does not say how long it took or how it happened, only that it's true. For those of us who still wait in the shadows, here is the promise of our own personal Easter. It is true, and it is ahead of us. And some of us know this to be true, and some of us are anticipating what God promises to do. And we certainly don't want God to waste all the time and effort that God has already invested in us. In December 1988, the world almost lost Dave Brubeck. Yes, that Dave Brubeck, the world-famous jazz musician. He was having a series of heart episodes and under the care of a cardiologist named Lawrence Cohen. Dave kept putting off bypass surgery because of his concert schedule, but the delay was not doing him any favors. Finally, Dr. Cohen ordered him to a hospital in Connecticut. The night before the surgery, Dr. Cohen stopped in to see his world-famous patient. It was 10:30 at night, and the cardiologist walked in to discover Brubeck with music manuscript paper scattered all over his bed. He was writing a piece of music because he couldn't sleep. Dr. Cohen said, "What are you doing? It's the night before your surgery." Dave looked up and said, "I'm writing out one of your psalms." "What can you do, Lord? Can the dust praise thee if you put me down in the pit? And joy will come in the morning." Psalm 30. The next day, the surgery went well, and months later, Dave took Dr. Cohen to the premiere of the piece. It was a large-scale composition for choir and orchestra called Joy Comes in the Morning. Brubeck dedicated the piece to his cardiologist, and at one point in the performance, Brubeck began to smirk. Suddenly, Dr. Cohen realized why. Dave had created the baseline for the piece from a transcription of his own irregular heartbeat. And right in the middle of the performance, both of them laughed out loud. Laughter is possible. Do you believe that? Joy can come. Do you believe it? Yes. Our God is an Easter God. God will lift our souls from Sheol and turn our mourning into a fresh new day. Let us pray. Holy God, be gracious to us and come alongside of us to help. Lift us from the dust and the ashes and into the light of your eternal presence. This we ask now and forever. Amen.
Our preacher today, the Reverend Bill Carter, is the senior pastor of First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, Pennsylvania, and the director of the Presby Bop Quartet. For a free transcript of his message titled Morning to Morning, call us at 404-815-9110. That's 404-815-9110. Email us at info@dayone.org. That's info@day1.org. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Please keep in mind that Day 1 depends on the financial offerings of our faithful listeners. We're grateful for your support. I'm Sherry Miller. Next week on Day 1, Bill Carter returns with a sermon on Psalm 23 entitled Nagging Grace. Be sure to listen next time on Day 1. Now, Bill Carter offers some final reflections on his sermon today with our host, Peter Wallace.
Bill, Psalm 30 is fascinating when you dig into it, as you have for us. You said it's filled with joy, but as we work through it, we learn it is a hard-earned joy. The psalmist knew about the reality of trouble. What particular kind of trouble, we don't know, but maybe that's a good thing because we can each identify with it more meaningfully in our own troubles, as you pointed out. This may be a short psalm, but it takes time to get to the place of joy. Would you say more about how we make our way to that place?
I think one of the invitations of the psalm is to embrace our own vulnerability and not try to smooth over our difficulties or allow a tough crust to form over the top, but to come before God vulnerable and available, praying for help. That's not to say that everything will flip immediately, but if we do trust in a generous, gracious, healing God, we can all be awaiting for His healing and His consolation.
You call this a daring prayer because it's kind of arguing with God. Why would you allow this? Do something, and God does. Can we, should we really pray like that?
Why not? Why not try? Why not let God know exactly what is written on our hearts, our broken hearts?
You shared an amazing story about the jazz icon Dave Brubeck and how he came to write a choral setting of Psalm 30, and you have a recording of it that we want our listeners to hear a portion of. But before we go, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will keep in mind in the days ahead?
Let me quote Tony Campolo. It's Friday, but Sunday's coming.
Amen. Bill Carter, thank you for being with us. We look forward to having you back next week.
Thank you.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for listening. I'm Sherry Miller wishing you all God's blessings on day one and forever.